Welcome to part two of the Double X Science podcast with Matthew Francis discussing his reviews over the past few months.
We also reviewed back in May Mary Roach's Gulp, which I believe was brand spanking new out at that time.
That's right.
And that book...
That book is hilarious.
I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I heard quite a bit about it when it first came out. So could you tell us a little bit about the book and then... And maybe a little bit about what your review focused on.
I've been a Mary Roach fan for years. She's a very engaging writer on scientific topics, but it's not your typical popular science book. What she tends to do is pick a particular big overarching theme, in this case, digestion and eating. Something that concerns all of us, obviously. Mm-hmm. And previous books have talked about stuff like the scientific search for the afterlife or what kinds of physiological things are required for putting people into space. Stuff like that. She's talked about that kind of stuff. But then what she does is basically goes out and asks questions in a completely fearless way. So she lets herself participate in experiments, she goes to labs, she talks to everybody, and asks some crazy questions to people and gets answers and makes great books about it. So Gulp is, Gulp is just the latest in that line, and the fearlessness is really what comes through in it. She's not afraid to put herself into some pretty crazy situations and to ask some questions that are pretty nuts and then write about it in a very funny way.
You've reviewed other books of hers. The Packing from Mars did appear on your Galileo's Pendulum in the past. You mentioned that this is a very funny book to read. So
yes.
Would that make it perhaps a little easier for people who, sometimes even reading popular science books, it kind of drones a little bit, but it sounds to me like this is not the case here. Do you have a particular person this type of book would appeal to? Are there people who might not like it?
I would say the only people who wouldn't like it are people who are excessively squeamish.
Okay.
Just because... I mean, you're talking about digestion. Mm-hmm. There's a chapter on smuggling stuff into prison through your butt.
Oh.
Okay? There's stuff about animals that eat their own poop, which is actually not that uncommon, especially in herbivores, because it's food in which the animal's digesting it on the first pass, so to speak. It doesn't digest fully, and so the animal... ingest their own poop. Okay, well, if you're grossed out by that kind of thing, don't read the book. Or at least skip that chapter, or don't read it while you're eating. I read that chapter while I was eating, and that was a mistake.
Yeah.
It's really interesting stuff, and of course, anybody who studies animals, anybody who would study a rabbit or other species, that's normal behavior.
Yeah.
And there's obviously a reason why they eat this. This isn't neurotic behavior. It's not deviant behavior. But this is the kind of thing you find out from reading this book, kind of thing you discuss. And again, it's boundless curiosity. If you are the kind of person who just wants to know about a lot of things, this is a great book. And Mary Roach's books are great about that as well. And, actually this is a great segue because Brian Swietek, who wrote My Beloved Brontosaurus, which I know we talked about on a previous podcast, mentioned explicitly that he drew inspiration from Mary Roach. He was trying to be more engaging, more funny than your average popular science book, and cited her as an example of this is how more of us should write. We should be writing in an engaging way, a funny way, not worry about coming off as being the stereotype of the professor who must be always serious at every moment in time. We just because the topic may be serious, the topic may be an area of sincere, serious, in-depth research, but that doesn't mean we have to talk about it like it's life or death. I mean, even if it is life or death, that doesn't mean we can't deal with it in a funny way or at least a personally engaging way. And that's something I really appreciate about Brian's book, something I really appreciated about Mary Roach's book.
Of all these books that you reviewed, the only one I managed to read so far is My Beloved Brontosaurus by Brian Swiatek, and that was written from a very personal point of view. So it was like his story of his love of dinosaurs from a very young age, and he interwove, you know, his personal life and discussions he's had with his wife about they don't go on Caribbean cruises, they go to Utah to fossil hunt or whatnot, which is not maybe everybody's idea of the ideal relaxing vacation, but it's what they do. And so it's, again, that you and I did discuss that quite a while ago, but hopefully we've got some listeners who haven't heard that. So we'll go ahead and give it a little love today. That book was released in April. So it's still also quite new out. This conversation I've actually even heard recently about how some names, such as the Brontosaurus, are now defunct, right? The Brontosaurus isn't actually what we think it is. First of all, there's a different name, and second of all, it has the wrong head or something on the, when we think about the image, it's not quite the right even image. So can you go into a little bit about that aspect of the book?
Brian's really trying to present the modern view of dinosaurs, which a lot of people haven't caught up on because, I mean, let's put it this way. 20 years ago, Jurassic Park came out, which makes me feel very old to say that, 20 years.
Yeah.
But I would say that's still the view a lot of us have of dinosaurs. When we think of a dinosaur, we think of the Tyrannosaurus Rex stomping around and the Velociraptors running around. And of course, the thing is, we know that first they called those Velociraptors, but they're not actually Velociraptors. Velociraptors were about turkey size. They were a lot smaller animal. Maybe a little bigger, but they were not.
Right, I think they were about turkey size.
Bigger than a human.
Right, they weren't the size presented in that particular movie.
Yeah. And they were also completely covered in feathers. And probably those feathers were colored in a way that, I don't think we know the colors of those feathers, but the fact is we're able to know the colors of some of those feathers. And that's something that Brian talks about. You know, we have come a long way. And the fact is, even in 1993, when the movie came out, some of that stuff was known, but they chose not to put it in the movie because dinosaurs, in people's minds, aren't feathered.
Right.
Well, we need to change that because, of course, dinosaurs were feathered.
Right, and at what point do you decide to feather them or not, right? If everyone's like, oh, but everyone thinks dinosaurs aren't feathered, so we can't feather them. Well, at some point you have to feather them so people will know that dinosaurs are feathered.
Exactly, right.
It's a chicken or the egg scenario where you gotta just do one of them, right?
And so, and this is a great thing too, of course, is that there are artists, paleo artists, who are drawing and painting dinosaurs with feathers now. And so I think people will come around. People will start saying, oh yes, Tyrannosaurus was feathered, and that doesn't make it any less scary because it had 6-inch long teeth. Its head was the size of a young child and therefore could eat us in a couple of bites. Having feathers does not make that animal less scary.
Yes.
This was an apex predator, and so feathers don't make it less scary. You know, and if anybody has ever seen a bird of prey eating, those are grim animals. They're not cute because they're feathered. So I think changing people's attitudes about that, and Brian's book is really good about that. I mean, the chapter on dino sex is the one everybody talks about, but frankly, the dino feathers chapter is one that you could probably read in out of context just to talk about, hey, this is stuff that doesn't always get preserved. Feathers don't always get preserved. In fact, they don't usually get preserved. But we're still able, in some cases, to see the feathers on these dinosaurs and to even, in some cases, know what colors those feathers were. And that is so exciting, and that is so interesting. Yeah. And of course, it also, you know, for, as a physicist, that also interests me because you have to use physics. You have to use biochemistry. You have to use techniques that were developed in all the, in those areas to know what the colors of those feathers were. So it's really intersecting all of these areas of knowledge. That's really, really cool.
That is very cool. I do recall when the movie came out that some of the stuff was fairly new. Like, your Velociraptor wasn't in your typical dinosaur book, right? So I knew
right.
about Brontosaurus and Triceratops and Tyrannosaurus Rex from my childhood growing up, you know, and a couple others. But even the word Velociraptor, and even if it wasn't the actual, portrayal of what the Velociraptor is in science, it was a new thing to me. And I
right.
do remember there actually being a discussion about the fact that it was sort of new knowledge, right, that they were feathered at the time, and so then they didn't put that in because people didn't know. But that,
right.
in some ways, brought then this knowledge of feathers sort of to the forefront, even though the movie didn't include it. As you watch more and more, hopefully this will propagate out. Although, I can't think about, you have The Land Before Time, which is a children's movie from, I think, about that same time.
I think a few years older, actually, but yeah.
And I just recently saw that playing on, I can't remember what, but I remember sitting somewhere and it was on TV. I think I was in like a yogurt shop or something where they play kids-related movies. So, I don't know, it might be a while,
yeah.
Matthew, before they can
I agree.
Maybe take over these images of dinosaurs.
But I mean, again, this is why books like this are important, and, you know, the other thing too, of course, is that as that information propagates into kids' books, that's where it's really gonna change, because I would say, Brian's book is for our inner kid who never got over dinosaurs, you know, the idea that somehow you're supposed to go through your dinosaur phase and grow out mm-hmm. of it, which is stupid and wrong. Because frankly, you know, dinosaurs are cool whether you're 8 years old or 38. But,
I know quite a few grown-ups who are very fascinated with birds and what is that but not a dinosaur obsession.
Exactly, yes. And that's the other thing too, is that we have fully absorbed that in our culture now, I think, that birds are the branch of dinosaurs that didn't go extinct.
Mm-hmm.
Birds are dinosaurs. Living dinosaurs, and I think our culture is coming around to that, and that's something also that Brian's book emphasizes very strongly. So I really hope people read it. I hope people buy it and read it because it is a very good book, and you can learn a lot about dinosaurs. And you know, remember, you know, if you were the dinosaur kid like I was, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners probably were too. They may have kids who are in the dinosaur phase. Who are the dinosaur kids.
Well, and every kid.
You know, this is the book for
and
them.
I think every
right?
kid
this
has
is...
some dinosaur books. I don't know any kid whether
well, yeah.
or not they go through get you know the levels of immersion into it may vary, right? But I was never totally steeped in dinosaurs. My interests always were slightly different, but at the same time, that love of dinosaurs and interest in them never totally faded either. It's not something I grew out
right.
of. Like, my level of interest in them has sort of remained the same always. So it's good for people who, anyone who has any remote interest in dinosaurs. And one thing I would comment on it, as the only book in that we've discussed today that I've read is, you know, it's a pretty digestible read. It's not, you're not slogging through it. It's
right.
got a lot of information, but it's presented in a very manageable way. And
yes.
And I read it fairly quickly. Like I said, it's not an easy read. You're not going to blow through it like a, you know, paperback novel or something, but it's
right.
It's not going to drag you down. You're not going to fall asleep reading it. You're going to laugh out loud reading it.
Some parts.
Not the whole thing, obviously,
yes.
but yeah. Which maybe you don't...
Again, the dino sex chapter. There were a couple moments there where I laughed out
yeah.
loud.
Yep. So, while I would have liked more pictures, and not necessarily during the dino sex chapter, but during all the chapters, some of the things he describes, I really would have loved more pictures, but, you know, it was a really good book, and I hope that he's able to do more, even, and see what else he's going to produce. So I think that about covers at least the four books I saw that you had at Double X Science in the last 4 months or so. Do you have any more expected books outside of the book review request that I already gave?
I don't have any lined up at the moment, but I'm going to look out for, I'm always on the lookout for new popular science books, or at least new to me popular science books. And so I'm open to suggestions. If you want me to read a book and review it, send suggestions. I don't know how best for people to do that. Maybe leave a comment on the most recent book review. But just go ahead and do that, and I will take it into consideration.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for joining me today, Matthew, and to discuss your books over the last few months, the book reviews you've had over the past few months at Double X Science.
And thanks, Adrian.
Okay. Thank you for listening. Please subscribe to our podcast via iTunes or your favorite podcatcher. If you are enjoying the podcast, please rate our podcast and leave a review at iTunes to help bring science to more people. Our music is provided by Editor-in-Chief Emily Willingham. Our artwork is by Dallas Lopez. Please like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at XXI. This has been Chemistry Editor Adrian Marick and Physics Editor Matthew Francis. We are XX Science, bringing science to the woman in you.